This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Lickety-split fashion.
That's what they call me on the beat. Lickety-split.
Lickety-split Weeder.
Dan Weeder.
We'll mention this mainly because Dan Weeder said we would mention this nugget.
Bears beat reporter for The Athletic.
You're going to have to win occasionally without sending extra pressure. And then if you do send the extra pressure, you got to get there. And there were a couple times that they sent everybody and they didn't get there. And Jordan Love made them pay. And then there's a celebration in the end zone. And they're playing that song that they play up there at Lambeau Field. And you're totally dispirited, right? They're banging on their drum all day. And you're going back to the bench trying to find answers for what you need to do to get to that quarterback a little bit more effectively. And so I have not trusted a Bears coaching staff in my time on the beat the way that I trust this one to put together a plan that positions their team for success.
Co-host of the Take the North podcast.
I call Mo Lyman the Avengers. I call Drew Dahlman the Hulk. Ozzy is a Wolverine. Doctor Strange as left guard with Joe. The Red Hulk is Jonah. Darnell's Bucky because he has the one arm.
So if they're the Avengers, are you Samuel L?
I don't know who I am. Don't figure that out, but the Bears.
Dan Weiderer.
Man, you guys are good on Fridays, aren't you? You phrase the questions a little bit different.
With Spiegel and Holmes on 670 The Score.
This segment with Dan Weiderer, sponsored by Pottawatomie Casino Hotel. It's meant to be. Spiegel and Holmes off today. He is Anthony here, and I am Judson Richards, joined now by The Athletic's Dan Weiderer. Dan, the press conference was good again today. I know that Ben kind of felt like, man, you guys are really digging deep. But he used the word despair when talking about week two, coming off of that Lions loss, right, 52-21. What's most remarkable to you about the way that the team responded as won 11 of 14 games since that loss to the Lions?
It's really crazy to reflect on where everyone's headspace was walking into the Monday of week three and where we are now heading for the season finale. It's just, I think, probably the buy-in that Ben retained after two rough games to start the season.
Dan was cooking. Dan,
and his ability to get that was a big deal. And then I think to get the belief of the win in Vegas was a big deal for that team to understand, okay, let's take a breath here, catch our breath, get our feet under us, and then get rolling. And they've gotten rolling, obviously, since the bye week with the success that you mentioned. And it's just it's crazy to reflect on what that game was in week two, because neither of these teams resemble that at all as we walk into week 18. And so we'll see what we have in store Sunday at Soldier Field.
I was talking to Judson a bit earlier, Dan, just about sort of this being our first season in Chicago, getting to observe Ben Johnson closely as Bears coach, and you're obviously as well-sourced as anyone in the industry. It's one thing to have this image of what he'll be like as a head coach after being so impressed with him as an offensive schematic mind, but that game, that Detroit game and coming out of it, that to me was sort of the first legit test for Ben Johnson, was it not?
Huge test, too, because – and you've lived it. You know what it's like here when you get in these prolonged stretches of failure and the sort of contagious nature of the woe is me mindset. And that was there within the fan base for sure. Walking into week three, it was like, this is just a continuation of everything we did last year, just with a new leader at the front of it. And so it just felt like, it's not like people were giving up on Ben at that stage. It just felt like the Bears were further away than anyone wanted them to be. And so, the ability to handle that, to be very, very patient and yet persistent with the things he was demanding. And then you got to get some results, you know, and they got a few results that then were able to get the radar of everybody in the building up a little bit. And then when you continue to build on it, the snowball just gets rolling really quickly. You win 9 out of 10. And now everybody in the building believes in everything you say. And that's what, you know, again, I've said it several times here over the last month, that swell of belief has been the engine of this whole thing. It's what rescues them late in games. It's what has allowed them to win the NFC North when they were the only team last year from the division that didn't make the postseason. There's a lot of belief that has happened inside this building that's very unfamiliar to those of us who have been here through long stretches when there's none of it.
Dan, what can you tell us about the status of Roma Dunze?
Well, he's officially, Judson, listed as questionable back at practice today. It was just a short Friday practice, and Rome was limited in that practice. So I would imagine that they will play it cautiously. on Sunday. I don't think he plays. If he does, it'll probably be on a very limited rep count, and you start trying to get him on the runway for the playoff game next week. Good to see Rome back on the field. Even better to talk to him after practice and feel him being a little bit encouraged at the direction things are headed with that foot, and trying to get over this hurdle of, you know, this impatience that he's had to have through the whole month of December, where he hasn't been able to play football, and that hasn't been easy on him.
What do you anticipate seeing from Detroit? Because there's the one prevailing assumption that Dan Campbell is just this hard-nosed coach, and everybody's going to be out there all bloodied regardless of whether or not they're in the playoff picture. But then there is a reality for their franchise of Penei Sewell having a healthy offseason, Amon-Ra St. Brown having a healthy offseason is better than trotting them out there if there's not a postseason on the line. So how do you see the Lions approaching this?
Yeah, look, like, no one knows more about the pride of that team and from the top than Ben Johnson, right? He knows how Dan Campbell is wired, and there's going to be some decisions that they have to make, as you reference. I would expect them to be the same sort of feisty, gritty football team that we're used to seeing there. Now, this is not the team that won 15 games last year. The interior of their offensive line hasn't been the same. The secondary is very beat up, and they're very vulnerable. And so even the guys that do play, you wonder the psychological component of, you know, Grody and I joked about it on the podcast this morning, when you get into Cancun formation, right? And say, okay, I've played enough football this year, and it's time to just start thinking about what's beyond Sunday night. And so it'll be fascinating as you see the vibes in the building. I also think this is a weird spot where the Bears have played so many big games really since Thanksgiving weekend that even though this one's got things at stake, it just feels like it lacks some of that, you know, extra buzz that we've felt leading up to the last five or six games here. And so it'll be really interesting to see kind of how they kind of manufacture and find the energy early in that game to play with the purpose that we're so used to seeing them play with.
This segment with Dan Weaver brought to you by Four Seasons, your trusted local experts for heating, air conditioning, plumbing, electric, and generators. Dan, you're so right. Anthony and I, we were talking about, you know, other quarterback potentially that the Bears could face. And I was talking about Brock Purdy and Matthew Stafford and Jordan Love. And then he mentioned Jared Goff. And I'd kind of, in the conversation, forgotten that there was still one more regular season game to get to before we get to the postseason. But then that leads to the defense, right? Like, whether it's Jared Goff or any of those other quarterbacks, that is drastically going to change who we're used to seeing at Soldier Field. I don't want to take anything away from the 6-1 record that they have at Soldier Field, and they've won six straight. But Spencer Rattler ain't Matthew Stafford, or whoever it ultimately could be. Did Dennis Allen have any real good answers this week about how they're going to fix his defense?
Nothing specific, which is not unfamiliar to us. I think they are very aware of where they are vulnerable, where their vulnerabilities lie, and how they need to kind of compensate going into the postseason. I think everyone knows that you can't bank on getting multiple takeaways in every single postseason game you play. The level of quarterback play is going to be elevated. The game flow is going to be a little different in spots. And so you have to find ways to change games without necessarily getting the takeaways, you know? And so I think finding ways to get more disruption on the quarterback is going to be huge. They haven't been able to find that answer for most of the last 4 months. And so it is one of those Achilles heels that you look at going into the playoffs and go, man, like, if the Bears lose, there's going to be ways that they lose that won't be surprising to us, right? And one of them will be getting picked apart by an opposing quarterback that isn't pressured enough and just goes about doing what high-level quarterbacks in the playoffs do. And so the Bears have to be ready to take that challenge, and it's coming really quickly, and it'll be here, you know, next week at this time.
So, Dan, from a milestone perspective, it would be surprising if Caleb isn't at least the Bears' single-season passing yardage record holder by the end of the game. But to be able to hit 4,000 for the first time in franchise history for a quarterback is a milestone that I think a lot of us have been talking about for years. But what's the impression you've gotten from Ben and Caleb, and how important it is to them?
Well, two different impressions from those two guys, because Caleb told us on the first day of training camp in July that it was a box on his checklist. You know, individually, that's something that he strives to do because he knows what it means here, right? And he has that awareness of trying to become the quarterback that accomplishes things that none of his predecessors inside this franchise ever could. And so I appreciate that about him. I appreciate that that is part of his wiring and what sends him, you know, down the direction of identifying the targets that he wants to hit. Now, Ben was very forward earlier in the week at saying this is an arbitrary number. It's not something on the forefront of his mind. primary goal number one is to go out and win a football game. And if things happen within the flow of that, then great. But I do think that if the opportunity presents itself and the Bears are, you know, in a situation where they can choose whether to run or pass, or they can choose to go after this record with a little bit more aggression late in the game Sunday, I think Ben will give his quarterback an opportunity to do so as a little bit of a reward for all of the investment that Caleb has given him throughout the season. And so, yeah, I think that's a little fun subplot to Sunday for all of us, because it is a milestone that I think all of us would prefer not to talk about again after this year.
It kind of seems like an easy way to rally the troops too, right, Dan? As we were kind of talking about, you know, looking past week 17 as they headed towards the playoffs. And listen, this coaching staff, I think this is a team I think they'll be ready to go. But as far as throughout the week and Ben Johnson trying to create major moments for this game, I feel like that would kind of be an easy one to rally the troops to go and get that for your teammate, because we know that this is a close bunch.
Yeah, no, it is a close bunch, and I think it would be a moment. Like, I think we all agree that it would be a moment Sunday if it were to occur. Ant brings up the Eric Kramer record from 1995. That could fall in the first half, and that could create a little bit of that buzz that we're talking about, where the stadium will come alive if they put it on the video board, and then all of a sudden, you know, teammates will understand where they're at, and it does create some of that enthusiasm that's helpful on a day like Sunday. And so, look, there's a bunch of milestones waiting out there Sunday for the Bears. I'll give you one small one. DeAndre Swift, 3 yards away from his personal career high for rushing yards in a season. I think that would mean a lot to him. And the Bears offensively have a chance to break franchise records for total points and total yards in a season. And that's a crazy thing to talk about, given the history of this franchise.
Those teams from the NFC West, they've got a lot of high-level quarterback play. And then, of course, the Green Bay Packers know the Bears as well as anyone. As you just kind of look at what the playoff picture will hold for the Bears, do you necessarily have much of a preference, or is that almost too specific of a desire for where this team is at right now?
I think that those teams in the West feel more complete, and they feel a little bit scarier. Now, I will say this, like, I think for the city, the matchup with Green Bay is very dangerous, because if the Bears were to lose a playoff game to the Packers, it would remove too much of the joy that's been attached to a season that has rightfully established itself as being joyful, right? Like, this has been a really fun ride for 4 months. And I think too much of the shine would come off the season if they lost to the Packers. It would just feel like such torture and such torment to have the season end to them, you know? And so, like, that's where, like, for the outsiders, like us looking in, you're like, this is dicey. You know, it really is dicey.
But what if they beat them, Dan? What if they take down the Packers in the postseason?
And that's what I said earlier in the week. For a season that's been sort of built around the fearlessness that Ben Johnson has instilled in this building, that's the fight you want. That's the one you want to come down, you know, the row, climb between the ropes and go and take that fight, because that is your proving ground. And it would be a huge statement win if they were to beat the Packers on that stage. It's just you got to be prepared for what's on the other side of that too. And oh, by the way, as fun as that win a couple weeks ago was at Soldier Field, the Bears played 125 minutes of action against the Packers during the regular season and didn't have a lead against them until DJ Moore got that touchdown. So, you know, be careful what you wish for, I guess, and then just be ready for what comes your way next week.
The NFC is very deep, I think, is probably just the moral of that story. So as I've been kind of evaluating this Bears defense, discussing it and describing it throughout the week, and I guess looking for a glimmer of hope for what could be in the postseason, one of the things that strikes me is that I feel like, because of the amount of time that Tremaine Edmonds and TJ Edwards have missed, that there's growth that can still be there just in knocking the rust off for the linebacker core. Secondary, with guys still in and out of the lineup, I think Jalen Johnson, as long as he's, you know, intact physically, he should keep getting better on a weekly basis. So that, to me, is almost hope speak and wish casting. But I do feel like there's a world where the Bears defense is at least better because guys are just in the lineup more. Does that hold up for you?
Yeah, and those are experienced guys that you're bringing up, and you watch it on the first play from scrimmage Sunday in Santa Clara, and you watch Jalen anticipate a route and drive on the football and get a pass defense that then ricochets up into the air that TJ turns into a touchdown, and you're like, okay, that's what it looks like. Those are the types of game-changing moments that are going to be required in January from this Bears defense. They just need to come more consistently and not be surrounded by so many explosive plays by the opposing offense. And so you've got proven playmakers in this defense. You've got guys that can play at that level and have proven that they are difference makers. Now they just have to do it consistently. And that's really the secret to this league. And it only gets more difficult in January football, which for us over the last decade has just been like, you know, one final regular season game as we kind of wish the end of the season away. And now we've got a fun finale Sunday, followed by a home playoff game next week. That's going to have this city alive and electric for what's to come.
Dan, what about Kyler Gordon?
Great question, Judson. That's one that we haven't really circled back on this week. Probably a good Monday question for Ben on what the status is and whether they have any outside hope that he could return. I know that when he went down for, I guess it would have been the third time here a few weeks ago, I just kind of wrote it in the books as like, he's not coming back this year. We'll see if he changes that script at all in the coming weeks, but don't have anything concrete there to say one way or the other.
There's been, I guess, some resurfacing, and some of it is just sort of folks reveling in the success that Caleb Williams has had and the growth that's been there with some of the articles that were there from the offseason and early in the season here. The regular season isn't over yet, but as we kind of look back on some of the reporting that was done and interviews that were conducted and articles and books that were written, how do you sort of evaluate this arc, this ascension that Caleb has been on, not only in the production on the field, but the perception of the Bears quarterback seems resoundingly different now than it was just a few months ago?
Well, I think that there has been a bond between Caleb and Ben that has strengthened since Ben got here in April and really over the last several months as they've gotten some of the results that they desired. We've had a chance the last couple of weeks to talk to a handful of people, Ben and Caleb included, about the evolution of their relationship. And you heard last week Caleb admit that there were points in training camp where his struggles were so pronounced and Ben's irritation was so obvious that he felt that their relationship was fragile and that he didn't know Ben liked him, right? Like, and these are outward acknowledgments from the quarterback himself. And so then you just see this thing start to come alive where Caleb understands that Ben has his best interests in mind and he's coaching him hard because he was asked to coach hard and that's what their goals demand. And then all of a sudden you start to get results and you start to get growth. And now all of a sudden that connection becomes stronger and it's allowed them to have the results that they've had. I think we'd all agree that Caleb's got a long way to go to get himself to tier one of quarterback play in the NFL, but he's also checked the boxes of growth across every key category this season to give you reason to believe that his career is headed in the right direction in this building. This week, there's been a lot of praise for all of the pre-snap stuff, the huddle command, the operational stuff, all the things that you do before you have the football in your hands. That's night and day from where it was when we were in the second week of training camp. And so it's just a testament to hard work and vision and being able to be on the same page as your head coach. And so that part of the 2025 Bears is really notable because Caleb has found a way. And that's really what this league is about a lot of times, is find a way. And he's found a way to make progress. And now all of a sudden he's going into the playoffs with a chance to write an even happier chapter to what his legacy can be here.
Dan, is Grody behaving himself on the Take North podcast?
For the most part, when he doesn't behave himself, that's enjoyable to me. I like it when Grody gets a little stirred up a little bit and we get a little bit off the rails and can take some things down some fun roads. But man, it's been a lot of fun this year to do that show through a whole different sort of perspective and mood, right? Like, it's been a different mood for the last 4 months than we've been used to since the podcast began in 2022. So it's been cool to be part of that ride.
Winning, Dan. It's called winning.
Wait, what is that? What is it? Spell that, Anthony. Use it in a sentence.
Dan, great stuff. Enjoy the game. Thanks for your time. Look forward to it. Look forward to Sunday. Thanks again.
You got it. Happy New Year, fellas.
Thanks, Dan. Happy New Year.
Happy New Year to Dan Weeder. You know what? We're going to keep it on the quarterback. By the way, I do want to remind Score listeners, Bulls Magic tonight at the UC. Our pregame coverage begins at 6:45. Tip-off is at 7 o'clock on the Score and the Fitzgerald Equipment Bulls Radio Network, powered by Heli Forklifts. Can the Bulls knock off the Magic? Gosh, you talk about injury. No Zach Collins, no Josh Giddey, no Kobe White. Can they get it done tonight against Orlando Magic? We'll have that for you right here on the Score. But Anthony, let's go back to that quarterback question that you asked Dan Weeder. Let's use the F word. Franchise.
Ah. Okay.
Has Caleb Williams solidified himself as a Bears franchise quarterback?
Get him for a second.
We will. Yeah, I know.
Get him, Tyler.
On the Score's 34th birthday, probably not the best idea. We will open the phone line to you, 312-644-6767. Text calls as well. Are we comfortable in that space? Franchise quarterback of the Bears, Caleb Williams. We'll tackle that coming up next.
Excuse me.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average. And auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
Spiegel and Holmes.
You know, we call today Feel Good Friday, so I'm trying to stick to that, you know?
I like it.
Afternoons on the Score.
You're 270 yards away from getting to 4,000. To what extent does that matter to you?
Yeah, I think for me, it'd be cool just in the sense of there's never been one here, and you know I think I was brought here for you know those type of things and those type of moments that things that haven't been done here, you know to try and be able to accomplish, and you know I think it you know like I've said before the self goals and all of that always gets swept under when you go for the team goals, and that's winning ball games, and so that's first and foremost in my mind. That's first and foremost for this team, because the most important thing is winning ball games and heading into the playoffs with you know some momentum and some good energy heading into the playoffs.
That's Caleb Williams on the approach and going after 4,000 yards. He's 270 yards shy. He is Anthony Hare, and I'm Judson Richards. Great to be in for Spiegel & Holmes today on the 34th birthday of 670 The Score, WSCR. In fact, a man whose voice you heard first, Tom Scherer, will join us coming up in just about 20 minutes. Anthony, what did you make of the way that Caleb Williams approached that?
I really respect him being willing to be just sort of open and honest about how he perceives it. Would have been very easy to, and I don't think anyone would have necessarily batted an eye if he just said, I don't really think about those types of things. We're winning games, and that's kind of my main focus here. Quarterbacks get judged by wins right. And nothing else.
But he's also right.
Yeah.
It is why he was
exactly.
brought here.
Right. You know,
say it out loud.
He's brought here to win. He's brought here to rewrite the QB record books, and he's on his way to at least having some of these initial milestones that show what he's capable of doing and the production that he's obviously having right now. So to be just sort of open and honest about it, I think is a good thing. I don't think either he or Ben Johnson will lose a lot of sleep over it if it doesn't quite happen. You know, if it's a game where they've got things in hand in the fourth quarter and they've run the ball successfully and Detroit's been milking the clock a bunch somehow and the Bears don't have the ball. But you know what? If we leave them in for a few extra series, we can try to get those last 70 yards. I don't think that they would necessarily put Caleb in harm's way in that scenario. But a milestone is a milestone. Individual accomplishment matters to competitive people, as Caleb obviously is. And I think his coach, Ben Johnson, I think it matters to him as well. Ben blew it off a little bit more than Caleb did. But this milestone for this franchise, that's something that matters. And even Ben ripping his shirt off for the Wiener Circle hot dog. Like all those things indicate that, yes, he knows these things are there. Are they on the periphery? Sure, because there's a task at hand here that gets more of the focus day in and day out. But Caleb getting 4,000, the Bears having that milestone for the first time in their franchise, I think they would both get something out of it.
Also, one of the reasons why it doesn't matter is because the identity of this team is running the football.
Yeah.
They have the third best rushing attempt. They have the third best overall offense. And the reason why they're there is because of running the ball. And Caleb, to me, I think he's been very much a team guy. If they ran it 50 times and won, I would legitimately believe him if he said, I didn't care about my stats. I just wanted to win this game. But yeah, it is why he's brought here. And so it begs a question. The effort, franchise quarterback. Is Caleb Williams already there? Do you see this relationship for hopefully the next decade plus between Caleb and the Bears? 312-644-6767. We'll take your texts and your calls. Anthony, this text kind of stopped me in my tracks a little bit from the 708. It says, until Caleb signs a second contract with the same team, he's not a franchise quarterback. Is that a rule? Can I not franchise a guy until he's been given that second contract? Because I kind of feel like the Chiefs thought they had their guy in Patrick Mahomes before he was anywhere near that major second contract they gave him.
So I think a lot of people will have their own individual sort of arbitrary guideline for what they view as a franchise QB, where Tom Brady was winning multiple Super Bowls before he was truly respected as a franchise quarterback because he wasn't the one statistically carrying the day for the Patriots offense, for the Patriots team. But he eventually turned into that and became one of the most statistically spectacular quarterbacks we'd seen. But he wasn't that early. Right. It was about Belichick and the process and everything else.
And a top five defense year in, year out.
Year in and year out. Now, Kyler Murray, he's gotten that first bag from the Cardinals. I don't think a lot of folks would perceive him as a franchise quarterback right now. Trevor Lawrence, who was another one of these guys very similar to Caleb, number one recruit in the country, going to the college football landscape with all this individual success and team accolades that he had at Clemson, and then comes into the NFL as the number one overall pick. And yes, he got his bag with the Jags, and then there's been sort of middling individual success and team success since then. Now we're seeing Trevor Lawrence ascend again, but like 2 months ago, folks wouldn't have been calling Trevor Lawrence a franchise QB. So I think as an arbitrary guideline, I don't think that's a crazy one. I'm sure there's a lot of crazy arbitrary guidelines out there, but getting the second contract from your team, that does mean that you have established yourself as a guy that that franchise wants to continue to build around moving forward.
But even times in that second contract, it feels a little bit like the devil you know is better than the devil you don't know, right? I think Kyler Murray may be a great example of that. It's like what else do we do? Who else are we going to pay? Because if we don't pay him, somebody else will, because somebody else find themselves in a great spot.
But like Tua Tagovailoa probably isn't good, and I don't know the guaranteed money left on his Dolphins deal.
Too much.
And so at the moment, then, you know, he's probably not going anywhere else to be able to get paid big time. But unless he really recaptures something next season, then he could be on the outs in Miami after a little while. It goes like, oh, as long as he's healthy, he and Mike McDaniel, that's the duo that's going to lead the Dolphins into the future. So, and I just full disclosure, I come at this from the perspective of a guy who, when Patrick Mahomes finally became, well, not finally, his second year in the league, became the starter with the Chiefs. Alex Smith had success. Andy Reid has won and been productive with so many different quarterbacks. So as incredible as Patrick Mahomes was and an MVP that first season as a starter, like, you know, I got Jason Goff. I did a bunch of radio with here and Big Ten Radio. We used to argue about it all the time because he was immediately like, okay, that's the best quarterback in football. I was like, let me watch him do it for a second season. Like, I'm just slow to the party of kind of being willing and ready.
Jaden Daniels may lead you down the path a little bit. Right. I mean, his more injury-related.
Yeah, for this season. Right.
That also may be another case to make for Caleb Williams, because I think like his durability, I look at it, Anthony, a little bit as like, take all the quarterbacks that have hurt this season so much. Take Brock Purdy. Take Jaden Daniels. You know, who else has missed? You know, take even Lamar Jackson. Which one of those guys would you like to not run into at full speed if you add Caleb Williams into that mix? Like, he is kind of a stocky, durable 6'1", 230 pounds,
really,
right?
Thick lower body. Yes. Yeah, powerful.
Yes.
Right.
And part of it is luck, sure. But I do think that the way that the quarterback is built is another reason why I'd be willing to make an investment and to call him a franchise quarterback for the Bears moving forward.
So for you, by your standard, Caleb is a franchise quarterback right now.
He absolutely is to me. Okay. I am 100% in on Caleb Williams. It does not mean that I do not need to see to make, you know, improvements. Yes, we can talk all about the completion percentage. But as far as the text, and he's not a franchise quarterback until you give him that second contract, there's a lot of men that probably are going to propose to the woman that they believe is their lifelong partner, but they can't afford the ring just yet. When you know,
I've been
you
there.
Know.
Hand up, by the way. Yeah.
When you know,
I was on the practice squad in Green Bay. Like, all right, let me get a couple of checks in here because I kind of stretched myself a little thin with this ring I got.
Thank God my diamond ring was a hand-me-down.
Okay,
and all the wife just happened to like it.
Legacy ring. There we go.
When you know, you know. Caleb Williams, to me, it is the intangibles that he has that is so evidently clear to be some of the best in the league. Where, yeah, sure, Chris Collins can take issues with, you know, a 10-yard dump off pass that isn't accurate enough. But when I watch him win the way that he does, when I watch outright arm talent, because arm talent is not just arm strength. Mm-hmm. Arm talent is not just accuracy.
Right.
It is everything that is involved. Yeah. So yes, the F word, I am more than happy to use it on Caleb Williams. Okay. Does it feel a bit premature? Maybe. But the reason why I would give him that ring, and I'm not saying give him that big money now. Let's live on this rookie deal.
Yeah.
but it's because of Ben Johnson as well. Mm-hmm. It's that skill set. It's a guy I think is willing to put in the time, that wants to be great, that wants to have an ultimate legacy. His skill set with Ben Johnson, I think the Bears are in a really, really great place.
I like that. And, you know, you think about Kirk Cousins, like there were multiple teams that he got multiple contracts from, and I'm not sure anybody ever, you know, sort of anointed Kirk Cousins as a definitive franchise quarterback, but he was certainly a guy who was really productive every stop he was at in his career, and has now just kind of gotten to the point where he's aged out of people thinking that he can be someone who could lead you to
a
championship.
And Achilles tear would do that for an older athlete.
Yeah, that's certainly a part of the mix for his perception, but, you know, for a lot of the other quarterbacks who are in this sort of conversation, like C.J. Stroud, you know, he'll be eligible for a deal coming up here. And he continues to win in Houston. And this is another season where it's like, well, it didn't look as easy as it did his rookie year.
It did not.
But you just continue to see the Texans and him being a key part in winning. And a lot of it is defense and D'Amico Ryans as a defensive head coach and being able to have that side of the ball shored up. But then you've got this really talented QB that they just have this mix, this structure that works. But is C.J. Stroud a franchise quarterback because he's not throwing for as many yards as he did his rookie year and making it look as easy? There's sort of a number of different ingredients that can go into that gumbo that make up that stew to really kind of decide what makes up a franchise quarterback. I've talked about Donovan McNabb on this station. Chicago's very own, you know, a decent bit here where until he got Terrell Owens to Philadelphia, he was never a guy who put up huge stats, but he always won at such a high level and had so many key plays that he made during his Eagles run that led to their wins. And he's in the MVP conversation, even though the passing numbers weren't always there, but between the legs, the running threat that he was, and the critical moments, like, you know, Freddie Mitchell on whatever it was, 3rd-and-17 or 3rd-and-27, whatever that was. But he had so many of those moments in his career. Well, yeah, that's a franchise quarterback, even though he wasn't necessarily a guy who had the same type of statistics that Phillip Rivers was having, you know, during his time there with the Chargers.
Right. Although oftentimes with a losing record. I believe a losing record. You know, you can have a franchise quarterback, by the way, and never get to the promised land. Mm. So that isn't guaranteed just because you're willing to put the franchise record on. If you want to jump in, by the way, do so. 312-644-6767. Happy New Year. Happy birthday to the score.
Merry New Year!
Year 34. Tom Scheer, the first voice you heard on these airwaves. He will join us coming up at 345. He's Anthony Hare, and I'm Judson Richards. Franchise quarterback, or Caleb Williams. Am I too early to it? Or have you seen enough? We'll get to the text as well. You know, the durability, I think, is something that we can very easily overlook. And I get it, the completion percentage, 57.9%. Not good. But damn it, I look at that number and I say he is also the first to throw 1,000 passes and have only 12 interceptions.
Yeah.
So as inaccurate as he is, a lot of it has to do with him throwing it away, so nowhere near the sacks he took last year. I think they have the 6th most drops in the NFL.
And apparently he's got the highest drop yardage lost, I think, of any quarterback.
So he should be at 4,000, Anthony.
He could have had 4,000 already, right? Between his inaccuracy and receivers having drops, yeah, he could have been over 4,000.
So if you want to scream at me about his completion percentage, well, he ain't that inaccurate where it's landing in the hands of the opposition. I mean, you know, Brock Purdy passed to interception is far more higher than Caleb Williams. And it's one of those things that will cost you a game in the playoffs. Now, will I feel different about this conversation once we watch some playoffs football? If that statistic about how few interceptions he throws is a great reason why you can win tight football games.
The Bears have both ends of that spectrum, right? Not only do they lead the National Football League in takeaways, but they have the least turnovers in the sport. And with a quarterback, especially when you factor in that Caleb improvises on so many different plays. Now, he's getting better and better from the pocket, but he's still this improvisational wizard. And a lot of times when you have guys who are willing to scramble around and try these high degree of difficulty throws, it tends to lead to more turnovers. They tend to take more sacks and have sack, you know, strip sacks and force fumbles. And he doesn't fall victim to that. So there's enough tangible evidence at this point for us to look at and say, yeah, he protects the football at a really high level, especially when you factor in that he's not one of these guys who just operates within the structure of the way the play has been designed.
So have you declared it? I feel like I declared it. I don't know if you've Are you good with the F word?
I mean, no, I don't view him as a franchise quarterback
okay.
yet. I think he's on that trajectory.
You're beating around the bush there.
Oh, I love the direction he's headed, but no, I am slow to the franchise quarterback party. I'm not there with him yet.
Listen, I don't want to throw my own Danny Parkins QB1 party with Justin Fields. I felt very premature about that party that I watched thrown in
all
here.
Right. Uh-huh.
You feel similar to the way that I felt about that one.
No, because I think he will be.
Is it just simply too early?
I think he will be
a
franchise quarterback. For me, it is. You know, this is a very subjective thing, so I'm not going to
absolutely.
Yeah, I'm not going to begrudge you feeling like Caleb Williams is already a franchise quarterback. I did begrudge my guy Jason Goff when he was already proclaiming Patrick Mahomes the best quarterback in football because it was 1 year of that degree of production. Now, I eventually agreed with him. It just took me another year to get this. I'm slow to the party.
This is year two.
Stuff.
Anthony, how many years is it going to take?
With Caleb?
Yeah.
I mean, I was impressed by his rookie season, but he didn't prove to me he was a franchise quarterback as a rookie.
No, I certainly wasn't there.
I want to see a couple of years of him executing at this level. So I could get there somewhere in the midst of the 2026 regular season, perhaps. But I'm not there yet.
You know, success is an interesting thing, too. And I am success. Maybe that's going on and winning a Super Bowl. Mm. Let's just say for argument's sake that the Bears win one playoff game. Mm. They win on Sunday, they win a playoff game, then they lose. So they get to 12-5, and then they win a playoff game. That to me would be a successful season.
Agreed.
You now become the hunted, right, as the hunter, mm-hmm. as the number one seed in the NFC North. And then there is the question about the offseason, right? I mean, the thing that I love most about Tom Brady is the more famous he got, you felt like the more dedicated to his craft that he got.
Yeah, agreed.
That is a special human, and that is why he is the GOAT. That is why
he was playing better football at 45 than he was at 25. I mean, it's a rare thing to be what he was throughout his career.
The argument of Tom Brady versus Bill Belichick, Tom Brady went to Tampa and immediately won a Super Bowl.
Mm.
Immediately.
And I guess he only played to 44, I think. So he was playing better football at 42
it's
than
okay
he was at 22.
The Detroit Lions have never been to a Super Bowl. Tom Brady goes to one team and immediately goes ahead and wins one. It's pretty spectacular. But you're not there yet.
Not yet. Not yet. I see it coming. I can see it in the distance.
You kind of made me feel like you were there. We were together, Anthony.
I haven't crossed that hill yet, but I can see in the distance. I can see myself.
Welcome to the party, Chicago!
That was a moment. Yeah, and it was funny watching Spiegs, too, because Spiegs was like, am I invited to this party? Should I be in this party? But good on Danny for going to All In. Hey, 34 years ago today, Anthony, the score came through your speakers. Well, we'll celebrate that day with the first voice ever heard on WSCR. Tom Scher joins us next. Judson Richards, Anthony Herron, in for Spiegel and Holmes on 6-7 The Score.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. What if comparing car insurance rates was as easy as putting on your favorite podcast? With Progressive, it is. Just visit the Progressive website to quote with all the coverages you want. You'll see Progressive's direct rate, then their tool will provide options from other companies so you can compare. All you need to do is choose the rate and coverage you like. Quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy.
Going home.
We cooking with hot grease now, man.
Afternoons on The Score.
The Score Sports Radio changed how sports is covered and talked about in Chicago. We were the first ones to really get out there. And I think I changed along with it. And we had people who had, they nobody ever heard of them before. And they came on the station and carved huge, not a niche, a path for themselves and for the station.
Well, that is the voice of Tom Scher, the Chicago Sportsland Hall of Famer, also the very first voice you heard on these airwaves. He is Anthony Herron. I'm Judson Richards in for Spiegel and Holmes today. Tom, thank you so much for a few minutes of your time celebrating the 34th birthday of WSCR 6-7 The Score. Tom, what do you remember most about that first time? I know it was a four-month late start before finally cracking those airwaves, right?
Yeah, it took some time. FCC delays, there were a lot of issues with that. The Federal Communications Commission. So we thought we'd be on at the start of the Bears season, and we didn't get on until 4 months later. But I remember that it was a difficult path, and it was almost as if, you know, the old pioneers going out west, because there were not a lot of all sports stations in the country. There had never been one in Chicago, of course, and nobody had ever done more than a couple hours at a clip, a show here, a show there. So we were starting something brand new, and there was a lot of skepticism everywhere except within our building. We always thought we would succeed. It was just a matter of how much would we succeed.
What were the early days like of even just trying to build awareness for this and be out there amongst Chicago sports fans, letting them know that this can be the home that everybody can come to and experience these teams that we're all so passionate about?
Well, you know, Big Ant and Judson, listening to you guys talking about the Bears and things developing, and I mean, it's easy to forget this is the first year of Ben Johnson. But when we were out there in the first year of the score, geez, the first months, it was exhilarating because I was told when I got hired by Seth Mason and Danny Lee. Danny owned the station, Seth ran it, along with WXRT and a couple of other properties. I was told, we want to hit a clean single. We don't need to hit a home run. This is going to be a station that has a certain niche, and it will complement the advertising sales of WXRT. That was the goal. And I knew that we could do that, but all of a sudden, right out of the gate, man, we hit a double. It didn't take too long before we were hitting triples, and then, you know, within a year or so, we were hitting a home run. So It was exhilarating because really, honestly, guys, it took all of us by surprise how fast we succeeded. I mean, within weeks, months, everybody was talking about us. And there was a issue with the ratings company had screwed up the ratings, and they gave us either a zero or a nothing. It was crazy. And we knew that wasn't true because everywhere we went, people were talking about, in the sports world, you know, fans and everybody were talking about the score. And I was on Channel 5, so people recognized my face, and they would say, oh, yeah, I saw you on Channel 5. Hey, how about this radio show you're doing? They wanted to talk about the score. So the ratings mistake got corrected. The company wrote a letter of apology, the ratings company and all that. And we knew that we were really flying, and it was pretty exciting, I'll tell you.
Speaking of flying, Olin Krutz will join us coming up in just about 8 minutes on the score. Tom Scherer, who hit leadoff on WSCR for the first time back in 1992. He is with us now on 670. So, Tom, 34 years later, what still sounds like and reminds you of the first few months, even years of the score that you still hear today? I know the teams, right? But what else can you still hear through those airwaves that reminds you back in 92?
Oh, it's great. Nothing changes. We're talking about ownership. We're talking about new stadia. We're talking about coaches. We're talking about who should be the national champion. That was the first topic on my show that January 2nd, 1992. Our first guest, Ed Sherman from the Tribune, we talked about, you know, who should be the national champion. I was watching that game last night, Georgia and Ole Miss. And I had watched the Rose Bowl and everything. I'm thinking, this is just like it was, you know, 34 years ago. So, but what really hits me is the personalities, how the score is really part of people's lives. And it has been since day one, and how the listeners connect with the people on the station. And hosts have come and gone, but the station is still part of the fabric of people's lives. And that, every time I listen to the score, and I'm a regular listener, I find myself saying, you know what? This is just like it was, you know, back when I was doing my show or McNeil was on and Boers and everybody. And, you know, Mike Greenberg and Dan Bernstein got their start at the score, and other people got their starts there as well. Matt Spiegel is a perfect example, Lawrence Holmes. So it's pretty cool to see the generations continue, and I hear people call and say, wow, we used to listen to the station driving around when my father was driving me to school in the morning, or my mom was bringing me grocery shopping. And now these are adults with their own families and their own kids, and they're calling in and they're talking about Caleb Williams or, you know, the White Sox getting a player from Japan, you know, stuff like that. It's wonderful. It's really wonderful.
And before we let you run, Tom, I'm just thinking about just being a teenager, driving around, listening to Boards and Bernstein and so many other the amazing personalities that were on the station as it really, the popularity began to mushroom. And now the sports talk industry, it feels like, is just a big part of the television sports landscape, too. Just what have been your observations of just seeing the way that sports talk is now not just a radio medium, it's now really the main thing that kind of drives television sports convo?
You know what? I think that's the biggest change we've seen, because back in the day, the newspapers set the agenda and drove the bus. We would react to some of their coverage, but the fans were kind of led in a certain direction by what the other media was talking about. Well, sports talk has now, we drive the bus now, and everything is integrated. Look, back then, the TV guys were jealous of the score, because we were more embedded in people's lives. And it was a strange, Chicago Magazine did a piece about sports pundits and who has the platform. And the TV guys weren't included. I think one, Tim Weigel, might have been in there, because they didn't have, it's nothing against their skill. They were very talented men and women, but they didn't have 4 hours of live radio 5 days a week. They had 3-4 minutes at a clip a couple times a day. So there was a little jealousy that we were becoming such a big deal with a station at the time had a daytime signal. What I do think is a big part of this, and that's why your question is such a great question, is the writers went from hating sports radio to trying to be part of it. I sat in Brian Harlan's office. He was the PR director of the Bears at the time, and a well-known local sports writer, who I will not name, he is still active in the industry, was bemoaning the fact that when he wrote a piece and it appeared in his paper, people would then call the score and talk about it and critique it. Well, yeah, but they didn't like being criticized the way the players and coaches got criticized, you know? Well, now, but over time, the writers got smart and they realized, look, if you can't beat them, join them. And the writers became more important because they were on radio and television. And now it is, as you said, it's a big mishmash. Everybody's in bed together. Everybody's getting along, so-called. But back then, there was a very thick, thick bar of competition. And it's been changed by sports talk, and even TV is in the sports talk business now, all these hot takes and everything else. You know, you can have a complete fraud like Stephen A. Smith, but you can also have a legitimate person, and there are many of them out there who have great background, and they do their research, and they what they say is informed and not designed to just get, you know, a click. So I think sports talk radio, this is probably the longest answer you've ever heard, but I think sports talk radio really changed the landscape. I know this, as I said in that clip you played going into the interview, it really changed how sports was covered in Chicago, and the score started that. It
absolutely was. Tom, thanks so much for taking a trip down memory lane with us today.
Well, I appreciate the chance. It's very nice, and I'm glad. It's nice to be remembered. And I want to say this. Every time I'm on, I say the same thing, but I have to say it again, Judson. It is true. The score has never sounded better than it sounds now. It's never had better management than it has now. I did the morning show. I think I did a pretty good job. I think the morning show now is better than the morning shows in the past, including my own. So I give a lot of credit to the people on the score now and the leadership, whether it's Mitch or Kevin, whoever, you know, is relied on to do X, Y, Z. The station is very poorly run, very well run, rather. It's very well run. There were times in the past, frankly, when it was poorly run by previous management teams. And it's the management now has been in place for years and years and years. And I think Mitch has a lot to do with that. And I just really give a lot of credit to how well run the station is and how talented the people on the air are now.
Tom, all the best. Happy New Year.
Thanks, Tom.
Oh, okay, buddy. We'll see you.
See ya. By the way, most important thing is to thank all of our great listeners. I mean, whether you're on year one or year 34, This is all because of the listeners. Otherwise, it's just me and Ant at a barstool talking sports. But thanks to the listeners out there.
Which, I mean, Tom did say this moment right here is the best the station has ever sounded.
That's what I heard.
Judson Richards, Anthony Heron, I think we're in good shape.
You are listening to Four Seasons Heating, Air Conditioning, Plumbing, and Electric Football Friday, presented by your local Ford dealers and Pottawatomie Casino Hotel. Much to discuss. Olin Krutz joins us coming up next.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average. And auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.